Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Women Offshore Podcast. This is Ali Cedeno.
And Christine McMillan.
We are both experienced seafarers.
And at Women Offshore, we are making waves.
The Women Offshore Foundation propels Women Plus into meaningful careers through access to a worldwide community and professional development resources, while raising awareness amongst industry leaders and decision makers about issues affecting women on the water. This podcast is an integral part of our mission, and we appreciate you listening in.
New episodes of the Women Offshore Podcast are available every Tuesday. Subscribe on whatever platform you like to listen to podcasts on, and be in the know about the latest topics related to diversity, equity, and inclusion within the maritime and offshore industries.
Thanks for tuning in. We have another great episode for you today.
This episode of the Women Offshore Podcast is sponsored by Leader's Edge Consulting. Shantae's belief is that strategy without execution and adoption is pointless. For more information, visit leadersedgeconsult.com. Welcome to the Women Offshore Podcast. Today, I have two special guests with me, Captain Sandy and Captain Trevor from the Puget Sound Pilot Association. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Christine.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk to you today about your job. And so let's just start, Sandy. Can you just introduce yourself and give us a little bit of a background about who you are, where you went to school, just general information?
Sure. I grew up in the Seattle area and actually in Alaska on small charter boats. And was really just loved the water and wanted to work on the water and everything I wanted to do with on the water. So I went to Maine Maritime Academy and I graduated and sailed deep sea with AMO and worked on car ships and heavy lift ships before coming shoreside did a little bit of stint in the office for Crowley for navigation related stuff, and then became a pilot after I took the exam and went through the training program. And I've been licensed in Puget Sound since 2018.
Awesome. So Trevor, what is your story?
Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco on sailboats with my family. And we used to sail past the San Francisco Bar Pilots office there on the waterfront. And my dad had heard about what pilots did and thought that would be a cool job since I was really into sailing as a kid, starting like seven. He thought that'd be a pretty neat job for me. Both my parents are teachers, you know, no commercial experience in the water. And then he found out about what the Maritime Academy was. So I went to Cal Maritime, got out in 2006, worked for Crowley on tugboats for a couple years, and then ended up going and working for Bay Delta Maritime in San Francisco and became a captain there like late 2010, early 2011. I'd always wanted to be a pilot growing up just because that's what I thought would be cool, to drive ships around where I grew up on the water. I didn't really know, like, you know, that what you had to do it. I just thought that'd be a fun career. Actually did a project in high school where I interviewed one of the tug company's owners who had also been a pilot before and learned a lot more about the job that way. And then when I got out of CMA, just kind of always had my eyes set on, you know, what I needed to do to become a pilot, and ended up working in Puget Sound. So took an exam in both SF and Puget Sound and decided to come to Puget Sound. Licensed in 2020.
Okay. So both of you are at the pinnacle of the industry as a maritime pilot. And so why become a pilot in the Pacific Northwest?
We were actually living in Oregon at the time, but I liked the diversity of the work in Puget Sound. And I think Puget Sound has a pretty deep nautical history. I thought it'd be cool to be part of that. And there is something intriguing about working up there, working a variety of vessels. You know, you're everything from cruise ships to container ships to yachts to bulkers to tankers. Every day is different. Every job is different. Every port in Puget Sound is different. It's one of the largest geographic areas, I think, for piloting. And so that was interesting to me, that not every day is going to be the same. Every day is going to be different.
I chose Puget Sound. I actually, like Trevor, took another pilot district's exam. On the West Coast, we have pilot exams for a lot of our ports, and so it's a very objective process. So I took an exam for another area that only did one type of cargo. And I thought, wow, I'm pretty young to commit to only moving one type of cargo. What if that cargo ends? And interesting enough, that cargo did end for a little while. I took the Southeast Alaska exam, and cruise ships were their primary cargo that they moved, and passengers, and it shut down for a couple of years. So I was really looking at diversity of the vessels that called the port, as well as I'm just a lot of my family's here. So that's kind of why I chose Puget Sound. Our district is pretty challenging. We have a big area. We have a lot of ports. We have a lot of charts to draw. But now that I've been here, also a lot of it had to do with I knew some of the pilots here. And they, well, I was sailing in and out of port sometimes, and they were very great to me and very, you know, willing to mentor me and bring me along and encourage me while I was sailing up, because we require master's sea time here. And so that was really helpful along the way. But since I have been here, I just realized what a lucky organization I am in to be part of, and how we're growing and changing and making it more welcoming for everybody else too. And it's pretty fun and exciting to be part of such a progressive organization.
That's wonderful. You are a part of a great organization. So let's do a quick review of the requirements to become a pilot. What does it entail, and why is the master time important that you mentioned, Sandy?
So in Puget Sound, it requires that you hold a 1600 ton master's license. It could be near coastal or inland or ocean. It also requires that you have a sea time, and it's anywhere between 1 to 2 years sailing as master on a vessel, either in, there's 5 or 6 categories, either deep sea on cargo ships or tankers or special purpose vessels or tugs, either harbor vessels, ship assist, or on ATBs or wire tugs, fishing industry also. Our district is so diverse. We move ships of several different types, and it requires knowledge of, it's just a vast knowledge that it's kind of crazy. I mean, we draw 25 charts here. And so from memory for federal pilotage here, and it just takes a lot. There's a lot that you have to rely on and experience. And that's what really you're looking for, is the experience and also making sure that you have had that time. There's a lot of difference between when you first start sailing and maybe you just get your third mate's license to when you've actually been captain, and the years that go with it. And that really is what goes into requiring that master's sea time. There's several ports on the West Coast that require that master's sea time. I think it's because it is pretty challenging, our districts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say too, like we do everything from, you know, we're taking the con once the ship comes in. So we're conning for the transits, and then we're also doing the dockings, the undockings. And many people that sail know that you may be boarding a ship, and that may be the ship's first time ever coming into that port. So I think there's also a sense of, if you've served as a captain, you can empathize with that captain and how they may be feeling. You've taken over the con of their ship, and it may be, you know, the weather may not be great, and you can empathize with how that captain may feel because you've been in those shoes before. And I think, like Sandy said, it's just you bring a vast amount of experience when you've sailed as captain, and having that moment of you being the only one to make that decision. And as a pilot, you know, you are working with the bridge team, but you are, a lot of decisions come down to you having to decide, you know, how you're going to handle the ship, maneuver the ship, deal with certain traffic situations, deal with certain weather situations, and having, you know, those years of experience before help you go through that, I think, that mental process. And like I said, also interact with the crew and the captain throughout the entire job.
I'd also add that the state of Washington has decided through their law that they want very experienced pilots that have had a long seagoing experience. And so it's not the pilots themselves that have set the requirement. It's the state of Washington that said, we want experienced captains to be our pilots here to protect our waters. We want the best of the best.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact of drawing 25 charts is wild to me to even get in. And then I can just imagine your job is very challenging. The weather is one thing that Trevor mentioned. And then being able to empathize with the captain who sailed all the way across the ocean and he's relinquishing the con of his vessel to you. And so can you tell me about a challenge that people don't know about until they are in your shoes? And so, and we can say steel-toed boots here. And Sandy, we'd love for you to talk about your experience as a female, especially working with foreign captains.
I would say that when I was sailing on a ship as a female, I worked really hard and people knew who I was because they were my shipmates. And I didn't really have a lot of hard time with people thinking or saying that I wasn't doing my job or I couldn't do my job. I sailed more than the average person in a calendar year. I always said yes. I wanted to come back. I was always awake for every maneuver. I just was excited and I wanted to know everything about it. And I wanted to, when I was third mate, I wanted to be the second mate. And when I was second mate, I wanted to be the chief mate. And so I would always help them. And when I was chief mate, I was eager to be captain. And then I became captain. I was like, oh, there's nobody. I remember that feeling when I first left the dock for the first time. I was in Papua New Guinea as captain. And it was a straightforward undocking, and I undocked and I turned around from the bridge wing and I realized that's it. That's me. So as a pilot, it is kind of the similar thing, except for you're solo. You know, it is you. You have a bridge team that can back you up. But really, at the end of the day, you're the one making those decisions. And I am grateful for my sea time and my experience in years as captain, because I can look captains in the eye from foreign ports and say, captain, I've been in your shoes. I've sailed, captain. You know, you want to talk about weather? Yeah, let's talk about weather routing. You want to talk about, you know, documents to interport and port clearances and customs and immigrations? Yeah. You want to talk about a Panama Canal transit? Let's go. You know, I sailed all over the world. So as captain. So when you get on a ship, whether you're a seasoned pilot, you know, that looks like a pilot, or a young female pilot, or you know, any other, whoever you are, right? Every ship captain looks you up and down for about 10 seconds and assesses, you know, is this going to be a stressful transit or it's not? And so sometimes my assessment might be a little bit longer because I'm a female and I look pretty young, but that's something that you got to figure out how to manage and control as part of your master pilot exchange. That I guess I knew that it was going to happen, but until I really saw it, that you have to quickly figure out how to gain the trust of the captain while continuing to do your job and passing along the critical information to him.
Wow. And I'm like remembering that interaction during the master pilot exchange and how, you know, from my perspective as the second mate on the bridge and watching the captain assessing the pilot. And now thinking about your role, it definitely puts it in a different perspective. So Trevor, what do you have to add?
Yeah, I'd say kind of piloting, it's a huge mental game as well. You're constantly, well, I guess two things. A lot of people, this is probably for people that don't know as much about piloting, but you know, one of our pilots explained this, like, you know, you're driving the ship with your voice, right? A lot of people think, oh, we're up there taking over and steering the ship, right? So for those that don't know much about piloting, I'd say, you know, you're driving the ship with your voice the whole time. And I think the mental game starts, like Sandy said, like once you walk up onto the bridge of a ship and how you're interacting with the captain and the crew, processing what's going on around you all at the same time. And that mental process continues all the way to the dock. So you could have a 9-hour transit and you get off and you're like, man, I feel really tired. Well, your brain has just been going the entire time, processing information, making a decision, dealing with electronics, radars, your personal pilot units, dealing with other traffic. And then when you get into the harbor, again, processing information, making a decision, communicating that process to the captain and the crew the entire time. So it is a very mental job, and it can be tiring at the end of the day. So I mean, a lot of people see us climbing the ladder, and they're like, "Oh, that looks that and that is like that's physically the you know, probably the most difficult and dangerous parts of the job." Absolutely, And that's how the job starts. You know, the job starts and finishes with probably one of the most dangerous aspects of piloting is climbing up and down a ladder and then stepping into the bridge of the ship and meeting a crew and a captain for the first time and kind of setting the tone with each other for the rest of the trip.
You sailed mate, you sailed as deck officer, Christine. Imagine waking up for every watch and going up to a different bridge and wondering what radar you're going to see. And if you've seen that type of radar before and how to acquire a target when you're in fog and traffic, or like wondering where the rudder angle indicator is, or where the RPM gauge, or where the clock is, you know, like, or where's the wind indicator, you know, every watch is wake up is, well, what's this mystery going to be?
Holy cow.
It's super. And then you do it at night, right? I mean, you sign on a ship for a familiarization and you do a bridge familiarization. And, you know, if it's at night, you turn the lights on and get your, you know, go through this checklist of where everything is. We don't get that. We just get up there at night and figure it out. And luckily, with the experience of years in our extensive training program, you're used to most of the radars and the equipment, and you have a good idea where things mostly are. It's always a guessing game. You never know where the bridgehead is. You know, where's the toilet?
Right. Or can I like make my own cup of coffee, or do I have to wait for somebody to offer it to me? Not to mention, you know, like the cultural differences you walk into on a ship, but oh my gosh, just like, yeah, that puts it in such an awesome perspective for me to think about how intimidating it could potentially be to walk onto a different bridge every night and have to figure it out instantly, right? Because that captain is expecting you to start giving him answers fast and take the con and then make it all smooth and this wonderful experience for everybody.
Yeah, and I guess I'd add on, like, I think that experience, you're talking about captain's time, having that captain's time is helpful because I think you've developed as a captain, you've developed your own way you may process information or begin to find information. Yeah, your captain's time and that experience you bring when you walk on, you're able to, like I said, you've developed your own, I guess, your process for, okay, how am I going to prioritize the information that I need to find out very quickly? And like you said, do it in an efficient and in a safe way, because once you get on it, it's time to get after it.
Trevor and Sandy, let's talk about the Pilot Association that you mentioned. And so how has it changed in the recent years? And what are you looking to accomplish with your outreach efforts?
Well, I took the same exam as Trevor. So we took our exam in 2016. I started training in 2017, and 16 months later, I was licensed in 2018. And we've had a lot of pilots retire in that period. And so there's been a lot of, you know, I'm saddened that there's all these great experienced pilots that have left, but I'm also excited about some of the amazing people like that I get to work with, like Trevor, on a daily basis, that are coming into the organization. Since I've been here, our group has always been welcoming and great to me. And I actually had the opportunity to have a child when I'd been licensed for about a year or 2 years when I had her. And the outpouring of support from our organization was amazing. I got so many texts and phone calls and cards. And it's like, you know, I'm the only female of, you know, there's about 50 of us. And so my daughter has like 50 uncles, you know, that are super protective and always checking it and wanting to see a picture of her and things like that. And something that's been in our organization for a long time has been a major medical program that when you are injured or not fit for duty, you know, for an illness or things like that, like not just like a cold, you know, but like a serious alert where you couldn't like ship back out on a tug or a ship, or you couldn't climb a ladder, you know, type of thing. The group, you know, has this program that for 24 weeks, they will support you and they will cover you so that you're not losing your medical, or, you know, you're continuing to stay, you know, as part of the organization, and you're not out on the street for a paycheck or things like that. We don't have paycheck. We're all members. We all own the group together. So it's not like a paycheck like you would get from a shipping company, but we're all still staying part of it. And so that's been that's pretty awesome. And so I was able to use that when I had my daughter to have that time off to make sure that I was able to use that before I had her when I was no longer fit to climb a ladder. And then afterwards, when I was still recovering from having my daughter, because I had ended up having a C-section. And so it was a longer recovery to climb a ladder than I was anticipating, actually. And so that was really awesome. And since then, our group, they saw that with me and they realized that what if I had needed to be, I was not fit for duty sooner? What if I was on bed rest or what if I had more complications? I had a pretty straightforward pregnancy and a pretty healthy, normal delivery besides a C-section. And so they really looked at the group and it wasn't driven by me. It was driven by my fellow pilots to say that, you know, maybe we need to step up and have something in place for if a pilot gets pregnant, because it is hard to go through the maritime, a career, you know, sailing and have a baby and continue to, you know, if you're in a union and you can't go into the office for the shipping company you're working for, then you take that time off and your medical benefits and your pay and all of that is related to that. And how do you answer that? And so because we require, or the state of Washington requires you to be captain before you do that, a lot of people that would qualify might not have children, but that's not fair because it's pretty awesome to be a pilot and it's even more awesome now to be a mom. And I didn't know that until I was a mom, how cool that really is. I always thought it would be cool, but I didn't realize it changes you. And so for our group to see that and recognize that and embrace that, it, you know, that probably won't be for me, but it, you know, that policy in place, but to support the next person that comes into the group, that's pretty awesome. So those are kind of the changes that PSP, Tucson Pilots, have taken.
It's really forward thinking and inspiring that they figured out how to do this for all of you. Trevor, is there anything that you want to add about this new policy change?
Yeah, I think if it will encourage more women mariners to pursue maybe it's a dream of theirs to become a pilot and a mother, having a maternity policy in place, you know, if anything, hopefully encourages them that there is an organization that wants them to be able to do, would like for them to be able to do both. There's still qualifications that, you know, every mariner that wants to be a pilot in Puget Sound has to go through to get there. But if this maternity policy is, I think it will be beneficial to any future females that want to become pilots in Puget Sound, and encourages them to follow their dream of becoming a mom and being a pilot. I think that'd be great. I know that was through some of our attendances at your, like the career fairs or the conferences. That is something that's been, we hear that oftentimes pregnancy and the pursuit of your career can not always align as easily as you'd like. So like I said, this policy being there, hopefully can be a bit of encouragement that you can do both. And yeah, I credit, you know, our leadership, and I credit our members for pursuing and making this policy happen. I think it's great. And there's been a few other organizations I know have reached out and were curious about what we were doing. So it's cool to be kind of driving ahead on something that encourages others. You know, outside of the maternity policy, as far as outreach, where you've been working with Maritime High School and other organizations in Puget Sound to promote the maritime industry to younger generations, because, you know, the maritime industry is hurting for people right now. And I think part of helping to diversify pilotage and diversify maritime is to reach out to the younger generations that may not even know that this career exists. We do mentorships through, you know, with Maritime High School, which is pretty awesome. I think like about 20% of our pilot organization is working with them. And we've done some work with other organizations that promote, you know, BIPOC and maritime. That's one layer, I guess, of the outreach we're doing. And then participating with Women Offshore, your career fair events and conferences. And we'll be going to the Women in Maritime Leadership Conference at Cal Maritime, and it's a good way to share our story and hear from other female mariners that are maybe interested in piloting you know, our paths, hear from them about what makes a pottage organization appealing, and just encourage them if that's something that they want to do, you know, encourage them to do it. I think that's what Sandy mentioned earlier about Puget Sound having a very objective process. Everybody meeting a standard set of qualifications, everybody's sitting for an exam, and it makes it an objective playing field for those that are wishing to pursue becoming a pilot.
I wanted to say one thing real quick, is that Puget Sound pilots will go anywhere to speak to anybody about boating or about being a pilot or a maritime job, not just piloting. And so we're in fourth grade classrooms. We're in, you know, at rotaries and at yacht clubs and youth sailing events, and we're everywhere we can be to just, I mean, we love talking about the water because it's our passion, and we want everybody to know about it and know that this opportunity exists. And I think about the maternity policy that we have is that Washington State, like I said, requires such experience to protect, you know, the pristine waters of Puget Sound. And so Puget Sound Pilots as an organization has decided that they're going to do what they can to bring diversity to the pilot group, because it's so important. Diversity is so helpful in, you know, keeping Puget Sound safe for different thought processes and ideas and, you know, people bringing from people from all over the country. And so part of that was, let's be the pilot organization in the country to develop a maternity policy. And with our major medical program and our maternity policy, it's pretty amazing. But because of our job is so challenging, and you just can't keep doing it when you're pregnant forever. I climbed the ladder till I was 7 months pregnant, is that you can get up to 9 months between the two policies in place to have a child. That's incredible. It's amazing. And it's not completely, you know, just get that time off. You got to work extra before and after and things like that. But I'll take it. I'll do whatever I could. I mean, that's awesome. And I want everybody to know about it. And I want to bring more people into our organization and more women. And so the Washington State is having an exam to become a pilot here in March and the spring of 2024. And I want everybody that's listening to this podcast that qualifies, that might want to have a kid, to put their name down and start studying. And there's my little plug, and that's why the changes in our organization, and it's been pretty cool to be part of.
Sandy, thank you so much for summarizing it. Trevor, thank you so much for your time here, both of you. It's really inspirational to speak with both of you and hear your stories of how you grew up and found your way to the PSP. And I cannot wait for our next time where we can sit down and check in again and see what future changes have been made and how you're getting out there and really sharing this industry with the younger generation in a positive way and being a great role model for all of us. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore Podcast.
Come back next Tuesday for another new episode.
If you want to propel women offshore forward, visit womenoffshore.shop. Make a donation or purchase some swag.
Until next time,
stay safe out there, and we will talk to you soon.